The commentary on this podcast is not intended to serve as or replace professional, legal, financial, or medical advice. While the insights may have wide applicability, listeners should consult with a licensed or certified professional in your state to obtain advice with respect to your particular case.
Can collaborative law actually work? You and your ex can barely stand speaking to one another, so how could you actually be in a collaborative process together? What if I told you that it could work even in high conflict cases, but that there are actually things you need to be on the lookout for to ensure that it is effective? This episode is a continuation of episode 62, where we discussed the fundamentals of the collaborative law process as it's intended. You may have this idea that in order for collaborative law to work, everyone has to be amicable and somewhat on the same page of agreement, but that's actually just a common misconception. And unfortunately, it's even a misconception that some attorneys have if they haven't been properly trained on the process. This is Divorced and Determined AF, the show that supports women with the information you need to know before, during, and beyond divorce. My name is Jamie Milam, and I am determined to empower you to live the aligned life that you desire and deserve through the power of awareness. You can start the divorce process with even the best of intentions and work with highly recommended professionals and still have a different experience than expected. So today, we're going to discuss if collaborative law is actually right for everyone, what it takes to work efficiently, and how you can ensure that you're hiring an attorney who actually embraces this process as is intended. I'm continuing the conversation with Jackie Caputo, a family law attorney out of New York. She has a deep-seated desire to help families by minimizing much of the emotional trauma that often accompanies a litigated divorce and chooses to focus her practice on helping restore peace to families and provide a clear path for the future through mediation and the collaborative law process. She's a member of multiple collaborative professional groups, and her passion for educating other professionals, along with the general population, about the effectiveness of this process is evident. She's also one of the professionals within our directory over at the Peace of Mind Initiative. So be sure to check out the full network of professionals and our growing library of resources at peaceofminddivorce.info. Now, let's get started. Divorce is an overwhelming process that most of us did not know how to navigate until we were in the thick of it, which can cost us a lot more time, money, and energy than necessary. Divorced and Determined AF hopes to change that. I'm your host, Jamie Milam. I'm a realtor and a certified divorce specialist who not only works with divorcing couples when selling their home, but I am also divorced, and I know firsthand how much having thorough resources would positively impact women for years to come. I'm bringing together fellow divorcees and experts working in the field to talk about this private taboo topic, all with the goal to help you feel prepared, educated, assured, confident, and empowered to make informed decisions related to your divorce journey. So whether you're just now considering a divorce, in the midst of it, or are now navigating a new norm and are determined AF to do it your way, this is your safe space. You deserve it. So let me ask, because you did mention this earlier, in your experience, Jackie, are there any common signs that you have witnessed that tend to lead to couples not being able to come to terms and then it being either turned over to the court, or scenarios where maybe you felt upfront that collaborative law may not be the best strategy and instead then lead toward litigation?
There are instances. There are sometimes red flags that would take someone out of the realm of possibility for collaborative. But my point and what I try to convey to people is that it can't just be a blanket statement. You can't just say you've experienced domestic violence, collaborative divorce will not work for you. There are certain instances where it would not be. It certainly would not be appropriate. I would be irresponsible if I was just coming on here and saying that anyone who's experienced domestic violence can still go ahead and proceed with a collaborative divorce. That would be irresponsible. But it can work in a situation where that exists. I have seen it work. And sometimes it actually lends to very good results because you've got an active team of professionals at your disposal to help, to jump in when things are escalating and try to cool the temperature and try to bring some calm and restore some peace and perhaps put guidelines in place that will prevent things from escalating to that point. So not always appropriate, but it can be. It can
be. Which that is also planting the seed that if that's the first time that this couple has ever experienced any sort of therapeutic guidance in their life, right? This is planting the seed for how do we communicate better to one another so that we can move forward, especially when there's children involved.
Right.
You know, anytime that we can get a mental health provider involved in the divorce arena, I am hands down a full-blown advocate for that. Right. But I would agree, especially being a domestic violence and a sexual violence victim myself, thankfully not in my marriage, but in the past, I certainly would be able to say, like, I could see how there's no way in the world I would think that I could sit across from the table and be collaborative with somebody. So just as you are absolutely correct, in none of this can we make a blanket statement, right? Finding the right strategy for you is what this entire podcast is about. But are there things that you have experienced that say, absolutely not, I don't think this is the right space?
Yeah. I mean, if there is a true imminent danger to one of the parties, to their children, if there is, well, here's one of the things. This is a voluntary process all the way around. So if you have a party that's already taken steps and you already find yourself in court and you are having to respond to your spouse's filing, then it's very hard at that point to pull it back and turn the ship around and make it a fully collaborative case. Sometimes people are concerned because perhaps from a financial standpoint, the spouse is hiding assets or depleting assets or taking things and putting them in someone else's name. Even in that instance, with the help of a neutral and good financial professionals, you may be able to trace all of that and still make it work. But that's certainly one of the things where I might say, no, it's not possible. But you really need two parties who are willing to participate in this way. And sometimes people say, oh, I could never get my spouse to agree to that. He or she would never be willing to do this. And I say, let's just give it a try. Let's just give it a shot. Let's see. And I offer the same informational consultation to the other party to just educate them, because there may be some distrust. And certainly things just aren't good. So it's hard to envision sometimes that you would be able to do this together when things are so disrupted and difficult at home. But everyone is in that boat. And with the help of professionals, you might still be able to do it.
Okay. So let's say then that spouse one, we'll use a husband and a wife. Let's say that wife feels like, okay, I'm willing to try this. I see the benefit in a couple of these team members. And she's found a collaborative attorney that she feels good about. Like, will the process work then? I'm hearing you say it's voluntary. So will the process work if her soon-to-be ex hires an attorney that does not practice collaborative law?
So it could. And it's interesting. I would caution people, because what I find more and more often, especially post-pandemic, is that more and more attorneys are putting themselves out there as collaborative attorneys. And you really want to do your research and make sure that someone is collaboratively trained and experienced, for that matter. Because the legal landscape is changing. The court system is changing post-pandemic. And I find that a lot of professionals who perhaps aren't trained are just sort of putting that out there and hanging their shingle saying that's what they do when they really don't. There also is a misconception that collaborative just means amicable.
Mm.
I see this a lot lately when I send that letter to the other spouse and I get a response from the other attorney saying, sure, I'm on board to do this collaboratively. And then they have no idea what that process actually entails. They've never heard of a participation agreement. They don't understand the team approach, the multidisciplinary approach. And they just think it means, yeah, we want to do this outside of court and we want to do this friendly. And so I don't always reject that and insist on having someone who's collaborative, because you can do an uncontested divorce with a professional on the other side who's opened to just negotiating outside of a court conference and outside of motion practice and hearings and trials. And so you can get it done. So I always welcome an attorney on the other side who is like-minded, but it is best to work with someone who is trained.
And so I would imagine then that means you somewhat setting expectations with your client to say, here's where we're at. This can work, but just so you know that if the other side isn't as trained on this, isn't as familiar, it may not work as well as you were expecting or hoping up front, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
Because what we know is that sometimes it's the attorney on the other side that can contribute to or maybe even be the lead in making this process more difficult than necessary. So what are some questions that our listener would be able to, let's say they're going in for a consultation, they've heard today's episode, they like this idea of collaborative law, they're willing to explore it a little bit more. What are some of the questions that she can ask her attorney that she's interviewing to determine if they truly practice collaborative law as intended so that she can get the best experience possible? And maybe what are some of the answers or the red flags to look out for to know that maybe that might be the most collaborative law opportunity?
Right. Well, I would be direct. And I think it's perfectly fine to ask about their experience, their prior experience. Where were they trained? What professional organizations do they belong to? And you can confirm that, because then you can go to those websites and those are really the professionals that are doing this on a regular basis. And it's a small community among us. We all know one another. We've all worked together. And so you can find out, you can do your homework and know who really has been putting in the time to be trained and educated and is experienced in this area.
Okay. I'm going to dig in like it were me there. So, all right. I can see that you are a part of the local Collaborative Divorce Professionals Network, or maybe that you're on the site, you've had the training, right? But I see it every day in my industry. I know real estate agents that have a license, they've had the training, but that doesn't mean that they practice with the utmost integrity or that they have the deeper experience behind it to truly navigate their clients, maybe even through like the divorce process or other situations. So how do we dig into that and not just look for their name being a part of an organization, but really ask, like, you know, because I feel like even when you're interviewing for a job, people have these standard answers that they can give you that seem like, okay, yeah, I'm going to take that for face value. But then once we get into it, we might find out that the family specialist that they are working with is burnt out and exhausted. Their financial neutral doesn't have as much experience. How do we kind of figure out if holistically it's going to be the right fit for us?
Right. Listen, I get what you're saying, because anyone could have a really nice polished website or put themselves out there and reflect that they are what perhaps they are not. I do think a consultation is really important. I do think that you need to go into that asking questions. And I think we all kind of trust our gut of knowing when something is right and knowing when someone has some substance and isn't just saying these like canned statements. I think you can kind of tell when someone has the substance behind it and can share with you experiences, can listen to you, can make you feel like they care and that they know what they're talking about. And sometimes that's something you can only tell from really having a face-to-face consultation and getting that gut feeling. And I know that that's...
I think that sometimes when we are overwhelmed, right? And I'm speaking from experience. That was the very first thing I said to my therapist the day that I interviewed her was, I feel like I am not in tune with my gut feeling, right? Like I don't know what my intuition is telling me. Right. And so when we're in that state of overwhelm, sometimes that, you know, we're already second guessing everything. Do we stay? Do we go? Yeah. You know, what do we do with the house? What do we do with the kids? Like, you know, it's all these different things. So that gut feeling sometimes can feel really muted. So just pulling out some of the terminology that we've talked about today, we ask them like some of these questions, because like you said, with asking other attorneys and they've not heard of a participation agreement, but yet they're claiming that they do collaborative law. To me, that's one of those questions that a woman could say is, aside from what part of organizations are you part of, you know, what's your prior experience, where was your training, but also what does the participation agreement look like? Is there a disqualification provision? Can you give me examples of what that would look like to be disqualified? Do you have the same family specialist that you work with all the time or is it multiple? Are we allowed to ask, who are the financial neutrals or the family specialists so that we can do our own background research on them? Are we allowed to ask that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's actually why I first responded to you saying that you should check out those professional networks and those groups, because at least on the websites of the organizations that I'm a part of, there's a lot of good substance on those websites. There's a lot of information. You can really educate yourself and know what to ask. You know, to ask about the participation agreement. Where can I find other professionals? Who do you recommend? Who have you worked with in the past? Questions like those are going to reveal whether or not you have any idea what you're talking about, whether or not you have any experience. But that would reveal it right there. If they're sort of dumbfounded by that, then that would be a good indication that they don't really know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's what's helpful here, is because we don't know the questions to know to ask, right? So when we don't even know what to ask, we don't know how to dig in. And if we can't rely, and trust me, I see sites, I see listings every day that I can't rely on the information there because the professional didn't input everything, right? It's not thorough. And so if we had very specific questions to ask, it helps us alleviate from needing to feel like we are leaning in on that gut feeling, because that's something I think as women, especially when we don't have that intuition feeling that we're tightly connected to, that can lead to also a self-shame process and state of emotion. And so if we can have very specific, like, checklist type questions, I think sometimes that's helpful to take the emotion out of it. But is there anything that we can then do to ensure that the soon-to-be ex also selects a genuine collaborative law attorney for representation?
Right. I mean, that's very important, because the quality of the team and the experience of the team will dictate how it all goes. And you want a strong team. And so, yes, that's another reason why I give out the websites, because I don't like to direct the other party to just one individual, because I think that doesn't feel right. I shouldn't be telling the other party who they have to work with. They need
to. Well, because she's not going to want to feel like you're buddy-buddy with that other attorney. Right. And so therefore, you guys aren't fully
representing one another. Although, you know, the collaborative process is a different mentality. It's definitely a paradigm shift for those professionals that are used to working in the litigation space, where you wouldn't normally have any direct interaction with the other spouse. In a collaborative setting, you do. You are able to talk to that person. You are able to ask direct questions to try to understand where he or she is coming from and what their underlying concerns are. And you really genuinely are trying to find a solution that works best for this family. It's not just about only advocating for your client and winning or losing. So that's why it wouldn't be appropriate, in my opinion, to direct someone to one specific professional, but to give them an array of professionals to choose from and to meet with so that they find their person and connect with their person. That's a much better way of doing it.
Absolutely. And what I will say, after really being in the space and networking with a lot more of the professionals, is that there is a good group of attorneys and professionals in this scope of industry of divorce that they do know other professionals in the industry that are value driven, that are seeing this in a bigger picture type of way, and that do want to be collaborative, but also understands representing their client. Right. I will say, I completely agree that when you're on the professional side of collaborative law, it is a paradigm shift there. But most importantly, it's a paradigm shift for the client. because we just know of divorce oftentimes feeling like the narrative is this is a knockdown, drag out fight that we're going to have. So I need somebody that's on my corner because God knows I've been struggling to advocate for myself. This is why our marriage is falling apart. Mm-hmm. We aren't seeing head to head. So I need somebody to do this for me. Right. So it really starts with changing that narrative and shifting it in advance to recognize that there is a paradigm difference here. When we decide that we want to go collaborative, it's because we are looking for a team of professionals that come together, that try to look at things holistically. It doesn't mean that we are trying to compromise things away from you. It's that we are helping you guys look at the big picture down the road and what the longer term effects are going to be here rather than how can we just fight the most and have this drawn out for years to come.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, I try to tell clients that this won't be the cheapest way of going about this. This isn't like a discount affordable way of doing it. But what I can confidently say to people is that it will be a good use of their money because it's a quality service and a quality product that's being provided to them rather than so much of the waste that unfortunately can go into the court process where you're ordered to be at a conference at 9:30 in the morning and you show up there and there are multiple other cases on that judge's calendar. And you're both paying your respective attorneys to be there. And there's a lot of sit around and wait. And then there may be an instance where the attorneys are going back into chambers with the judge or their law secretary and conducting a conference that the parties aren't even privy to. And in collaborative, that doesn't happen. In mediation, for that matter, that doesn't happen. It's a better use of your hard-earned money. And it's not necessarily cheap, but it will be a quality service that's being provided where every time you are being billed, it is for some actual work and thought that's going into your case. So it's just a better use of your money.
There's so many ways I could go with this conversation about the cost aspect, but I feel like that's going to be an entirely another episode, right?
We'll do another episode.
Because it is definitely a concern that people have. So, I mean, I will probably save my follow-up questions and thoughts on that segment there. But really, just to kind of wrap this up, Jackie, regardless of the route that a woman decides to go that might be best for her, what is something that you want to leave with them today?
So I think that when someone is on the precipice of this major life event, which is not something that they ever probably envisioned themselves having to go through, it's really important to take a deep breath and think it through and get all of the information and make a decision that is right for you. And just know what your options are before you make that final decision. Make sure that you know everything you need to know because this is a huge investment in your future, in the future of your children. And the way you handle this will dictate how it all goes in the future. And it's a tremendous decision to be made. And it shouldn't be made lightly. And it shouldn't be made with other people's voices and opinions in your head. You really need to educate yourself and make a smart decision at the start.
Couldn't agree more. Jackie, I mean, that's the entire reason why this has called on my heart is because at the end of the day, we all have experiences. There's a far more underground secret club of us divorcees out there than most people realize. And we can sympathize and we can vent. But at the end of the day, every single person's divorce is going to be different than another's. Mm-hmm. And we can only make an aligned decision that is right for us if we're A, aware of what we need and want and feel on the inside, and B, if we are aware of the options available to us, the resources that can get those options to us so that we can make informed decisions along the way, because the decisions that are made in any divorce are going to have long-lasting effect. Sometimes they are life-changing. And if you have children involved, they will affect you for years to come. No doubt. I mean, that's not even undergoing the emotional aspects of this, right? So you're exactly right. We have to be educated upfront. And hopefully we get to a point where we are educating women so far in advance of when they ever need to consider it so that it doesn't feel like we're preparing ourselves if our marriage falls apart, that it's right. instead that we're right. preparing ourselves so that we can strengthen ourselves as an individual and show up a little bit stronger along the way and alleviate some of that stress and that pressure. So thank you again so much for being here today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I appreciate your transparency and really, I really appreciate the value-driven aspect that you come from in recognizing that this space needs a change.
Amy, thank you. Thank you for the important work that you're doing and for this opportunity to get that message out there.
Well, there we have it, ladies. Hopefully there's some added clarity now to say that even with high conflict cases, or even those with domestic violence, collaborative law can bring in a new perspective to drive resolutions that benefit the family as a whole moving forward. In order to make that happen, though, you want to commit to working toward the end goal and have true collaborative law representation on both sides of the table. To ensure that you're retaining an attorney who truly embraces the practice as it's intended, you want to check into their background, what trainings they've had, what memberships and professional groups they're a part of. Ask them what the participation agreement and the disqualification provisions look like. You want to make sure that they have these readily available, as that's a great sign that they don't think that this is just about being amicable. Ask them which family and financial neutrals they work with and what other professionals they bring in on the team. Ask them what collaborative law attorneys that they recommend in your area for your spouse to consult with. Do your research before jumping in too quick to retain representation. These are big decisions that you're making, and the team you choose to help you reach the end goal here is a fundamental piece to your strategy. So making sure that you're aware of how to do your best to get the representation that you desire is our goal here today. And of course, we offer other lists of things for you to consider in the Peace of Mind Resource Center. So head over to peaceofminddivorce.info to sign up for free and access our growing resource library and directory of professionals that can help you in a multitude of ways. Until next week, friend, I wish you nothing but peace and determination.